Hey, listeners. Welcome to the Learn to Code with Me podcast. I'm your host, Laurence Bradford. Before we get into today's episode, I just wanted to remind you that you can get the show notes for this episode and every other episode at learntocodewith.me/podcast. And if you enjoy the show, make sure to subscribe on whichever podcast player you listen on. And if you're feeling particularly generous, a review would be awesome too. Here's a quick word from our sponsors who help make the show possible. Zojo is a development tool for creating native apps for desktop, mobile, web, and Raspberry Pi. Zojo offers lots of resources to help you get started learning modern programming. Learn to Code with Me listeners get 20% off with the coupon LEARN20. Try Zojo for free at zojo.com/learntocode. Zojo is spelled like X-O-J-O. Fullstack Academy is a leading coding bootcamp that helps great people become great developers at top companies like Google and Facebook. Visit bootcampprep.io to get a $500 scholarship to Fullstack Academy's beginner coding course called Bootcamp Prep. In today's episode, I talk with Alice Zhao, a senior data scientist at Metis. We talk about her background in analytics, a blog article of hers that went viral, and her advice for anyone who wants to get into data science. If you enjoy today's episode and it inspires you to improve your spreadsheet skills so that you can then get into data science, you might want to know about Ben Collins. You'll hear more about his courses in episode 5, but just quickly, I wanted to tell you that as a Learn to Code with Me listener, you can get 20% off his Google Sheets training bundle. If you want to improve your spreadsheet skills, just go through my affiliate link, learntocodewith.me/sheets, to find out more about his courses and get that special 20% discount. Again, the URL is learntocodewith.me/sheets. Now, back to today's interview. Alice Zhao is a senior data scientist at Metis. She has a bachelor's in electrical engineering and an MS in analytics, both from Northwestern University. During her free time, Alice writes about analytics and pop culture on her blog, A Dash of Data. Hey, Alice, thank you so much for coming on the show.
Thanks for having me.
Is there anything else you'd like to add to that intro before we jump into the actual interview?
No, I'm ready to jump right in.
Ooh, okay, awesome. So you were academically trained in data science, more or less, right? You have a master's in analytics, which sounds super cool. So I'm wondering, how did you end up going to school for that, for like analytics?
Oh man, it's a really long story. So I started in my undergrad in electrical engineering, and by the time I was a senior, I decided I didn't want to do electrical engineering anymore. And so I actually went to the Career Center at Northwestern, and they had me take a Myers-Briggs test, and I ended up being an ENFJ, which they said was perfect for consulting. And so at that point, I was like, I don't know what a consultant is, but let me try to apply to consulting jobs. And so then I ended up being a consultant at Accenture for 4 years. And then after being a consultant, I felt that the job wasn't technical enough for me. And so then I started looking for other options out there. And I read this article about Target creating predictions on which of their customers were pregnant and then serving them specific coupons. And I thought, oh man, that sounds so cool. And so then I learned that that type of analysis or that field was called analytics. And then that's how I decided to get into analytics.
That's such a wild story. And real quick, I feel like I know what article you're talking about. And wasn't that with the Target thing? Wasn't that something where they were like figuring out women were pregnant based on their behaviors before the women themselves knew?
Yeah, in that article, there was a crazy story because this one dad came into the store and he was really upset that his teenage daughter was getting these ads for baby products. And then it turned out that his daughter was pregnant and he had no idea, but Target knew because of their algorithms.
Oh my goodness. Okay, maybe that was it. Yeah, I remember some story or something with that. Like, yeah, something like that. So that's really wild. Oh my God. And this was something they were mailing home.
Yeah, it was crazy. I mean, at the time I thought it was crazy, but then I ended up getting into data science and now I have a better understanding of how all that works. So it doesn't seem as crazy now.
Got it. So, okay. So you went back to Northwestern, you study analytics And you don't have to get super in depth here, but I'm just wondering, like, what kind of classes were you taking? What technologies were you learning? What were they teaching you?
Mm-hmm. And so within analytics, you typically think of it in three parts. So there's a coding aspect or a programming aspect, then there's a math and statistics part, and then there's this business and communications part. And so our classes were split into those three groups. So on the coding side, we learned R and Python and Java. And then on the math and stats side, we learned predictive analytics and data mining. And then on the communication side, we learned about data visualizations, and then we took some MBA classes as well. So it was a good mix of all three of those things.
Mm-hmm. And that was about 2 years?
So that master's degree was 15 months.
Okay, nice. And then I'm peering over your LinkedIn a little bit, but when you were done with this master's program, did you go into data science right away?
I did. So when I did the master's program, that was back in 2012. And at the time, data science wasn't really popular yet. So as we were doing the data science program in 2012, Harvard Business Review came out with that article about data science being the sexiest job of the 21st century. And then after that, just there was a ton of interest in data science. And so when I graduated from the program, there were a lot of companies interested in hiring data scientists. And then I ended up joining cars.com right afterwards and starting up their data science team.
Yes, I definitely know what article you're talking about in HBR. I feel like it's still referenced and mentioned all the time. But yeah, as you said, it's when they call data science the sexiest career of the century. That was it, right?
Something like that. And then I just remember it was just a hot term. Like before then, when I went into my program, it was called a master's in analytics. And so then I just thought, okay, I'm going into analytics. But then afterwards, data science became such a hot term that's kind of what the careers that people landed into after the program.
Yeah, yeah. And I won't say good luck, but it's like right when you're graduating, like this article from HBR comes out, right? Like sexiest career of the century.
Yeah.
You must have had tons of demand, like you and your fellow, like the people you were graduating with, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I felt very fortunate to have just kind of fallen into this field all because I read that Target article.
Yeah, that's really funny. And also really awesome at the same time. And of course, you're still doing it to this day and now you're teaching others. So obviously it really worked out for you and something you really enjoy. And you mentioned Target, you mentioned the article you came across, and you have this blog. I mentioned it in the intro, but it's called A Dash of Data. And I was looking at it a little bit before we hopped on the call today. What led you to start this blog?
The whole reason I started this blog was because I really love the show The Bachelor. And after my master's program, because I knew how to do predictive analytics and make predictions, I just always thought, you know what, I bet I can create a predictive model to figure out who's going to win The Bachelor. And so I decided to start a blog so I can write about just that. And then when I started the blog, before writing my article about The Bachelor, it was around my husband and my anniversary. And so I decided I wanted to give him some type of nerdy gift. And so I ended up just exporting all of the text messages that we had sent each other over the years and doing some analysis on that. And that was my first blog post. And then from then on, I've done additional analysis like The Bachelor as well. But it ended up just being data analysis on fun topics in my life.
Yes, I loved that. And I was looking at some of them and I know exactly which article you're talking about, the one with how text messages change from dating to marriage. And that was the first one you wrote. And I feel like it was quite popular when it first came out, right? You have a ton of comments on it. There's like, I think like over 100 comments left on this single blog post. It's from back in 2014. How did people find out about it? Like, were they just Googling like text messages from, you know, dating to marriage, or was it posted somewhere and it kind of went viral?
Yeah, so I actually ended up doing a whole presentation at work about how that post went viral, but it all started just from me sharing it on Facebook, and then I guess a lot of people related to it, and so they ended up sharing it even more, and then it got posted on Reddit, and it got upvoted a bunch of times onto the front page of Reddit, and so at that point, I had radio shows calling me, and different shows like the Today Show wanted to do a bit on it, and there were just a lot of interest around it. And so, and then I think it ended up getting translated into a bunch of different languages as well. And so my parents, who lived in Shanghai at the time, they actually read a Chinese version of the article.
Oh my goodness. That's amazing though. That's like insane that your first, I mean, that's so rare that your first blog post would be such a hit, right? You're getting like calls to go on television shows and your family and Shanghai's reading a translated version. That's absolutely wild. And that's so amazing, but it makes a ton of sense to me. Cause I mean, just the title alone, like how text messages change from dating to marriage, and the fact that you found all this data yourself and you studied it and you know, you analyzed it. It's really intriguing. So could you give like a gist of like how text messages change? I'm sure you're tired of talking about it, but just for the listeners who are listening right now, maybe they're driving or multitasking, they can't run over to your site and look at it. What were some of the things that you found?
Sure. So my main finding was that when my husband and I were dating, we would text each other, hey, a lot. So H-E-Y, so we'd be like, hey, how's it going? Or we also said each other's names a lot, or we would say, I love you a lot and things like that. And then once we got married, we would say things like, okay, I think that was our most common word. So we ended up saying okay a lot in our text messages, or what's for dinner, or are you home yet? And the text ended up being more boring. But then my final conclusion was that even though that the text messages became more boring, it was only because all of the interesting things were said in person. Because we would see each other all the time, so we didn't really have to say, like, I love you over text. We could just say that in person. And it ended up having kind of a sweet ending at the end of the post. Because, yeah, even though our text messages were kind of mundane, all the sweet things were said in person.
Yeah, that definitely makes a lot of sense. So I'm wondering, how has your blog and then the related press and other just blog activities, how has that affected your career?
Oh, that's a great question. I definitely think it's helped my career. So when I had applied to my current job at Metis as a data science instructor, they had read my blog as well, and they thought it was a great way of making data science understandable for everyone. And so I think that's definitely helped me in this next phase of my career. And one of the other things that they do at Metis is for all the senior data scientists, all the senior instructors, they have everyone work on a passion project for one quarter of the year. And I was interested in doing some type of pop culture and analytics project for my passion project. And they thought that my blog was a great tie-in to that. So I definitely think it's helped my career in that I'm able to showcase that I'm really interested in data science and making it fun and engaging, and that can apply to data science education as well.
Yeah, and you just perfectly segued into the next thing I wanted to talk about, because of course you were a data scientist at Cars.com after you left Northwestern with the master's in analytics, and now, most recently, as you already said, you're a senior data scientist at Metis and you're teaching. So what drove you to make that transition from working like in the industry and then kind of switching into helping others get into the data science industry, become data scientists themselves?
Yeah, so I've loved teaching my whole life. So in high school, I was teaching math and science camps during the summer. In college, I TA'd courses. And then after I got into data science, when I was at Cars.com, I was teaching some of my coworkers about SQL and then also R, one of the data science tools that we use, just because I was the first data scientist there. And then a lot of people were interested in learning more from me. And so I would hold these sessions on Friday afternoons to teach people the basics of data science. And then some of my coworkers thought that I was pretty great at teaching it. And so I thought to myself, why not make this into an actual business? So while I was at Cars.com on the side, I started a company with two of my friends from my master's program where we taught a two-day data science workshop at 1871 in Chicago. So the startup incubator over there. And I ended up teaching with those two of my classmates for 2 years. and we taught data science on the side, on the weekends. And that was really fun for a while. But then two of us ended up having kids in the last few years. And so we decided we can't do that part-time anymore. So we retired that. And then this past year, Metis reached out to me and they asked if I want to teach full-time. And I love teaching. And so it was the perfect job for me.
Oh, wow. So I did not realize that you were teaching data science on the side before starting at Metis. And you had your own little business or side hustle going on. And you were doing weekend workshops?
Yeah, we were teaching these two-day weekend workshops where we would teach two full days, so 16 hours of content. And it was an intro to data science in our course. And we had a lot of people come in who had heard about the term data science, but they didn't know really what it was. And so we gave them a taste of it over the weekend.
Right, right. And that was all done in person.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Yeah, because at the time, there were a lot of online courses, which is great. I learn a lot of things online as well. But I found that a lot of people who are signing up for our courses, they wanted that classroom feel. And so we had 2 days in the classroom, three instructors, and we'd have two dozen students for each class, and then we could help everyone with their code in person.
Wonderful. So you've been at Metis now, you're teaching full time. How has that been going? How has been like the switch from working full time to being in a classroom?
I love it. I love teaching. I always tell people, like, this is my dream job. This is actually what I wanted to do later in my career. I thought I had to be a data scientist for a really long time and then maybe move to a university. But then Metis found me and I love teaching. And so the way that our schedule works here is we start the day with a pair programming problem where the students code in pairs, which I think is a great way to learn how to code. And then me and then a co-instructor of mine, the two of us lecture for 2, maybe 3 hours. And then the rest of the day is spent on project work. And so basically my job is to help students with their projects. So they'll come to me, we'll brainstorm project idea together, or they might have some questions about modeling or the code. And I have this whiteboard that I roll around the classroom. I basically roll it around and then I help them figure out what they need to fix in their code or their models. And that's what we spend the whole second half of the day doing. So I really like it because I never sit in the same seat for more than 2 hours. I'm just constantly moving, so it's a lot of fun.
We're taking a quick break from this interview to hear a word from our sponsors, who helped make the Learn to Code with Me podcast a reality. Zojo is a cross-platform development tool for creating native apps for desktop, mobile, web, and Raspberry Pi. With Zojo, you really can write just one version of your app, say, on a Mac, click a button, and have a completely native Windows version too. Zojo lets you abstract yourself from specific platform details so you can focus on what makes your app unique. All apps have completely native controls, even if they weren't developed on that platform. Just use drag and drop to create your user interface in one language to program the functionality. Zojo is perfect for people who aren't programmers by trade, but who learn to program to make their jobs easier. Users also include Fortune 500 companies, commercial developers, IT developers, hobbyists, and students. Anyone who wants to build apps faster. Learn to Code with Me listeners get 20% off with the coupon code LEARN20. Try Zojo free at zojo.com/learn to code. Full Stack Academy is a leading coding bootcamp that helps students become great software developers and get jobs at top-tier companies. Full Stack's Advanced Software Engineering Immersive course gives you the skills you need to launch your dream career in tech. With a cutting-edge curriculum and supportive educational environment, Full Stack has helped graduates get jobs at companies like Google, Amazon, and Facebook, along with many others. Full Stack Software Engineering Immersive is taught on campus in New York City and Chicago and is accessible from everywhere through Full Stack's Remote Immersive. Go to fullstackacademy.com to learn more. Full Stack Academy, making great people into great developers. That's awesome. And correct me if I'm wrong, but the Metis program is strictly for beginners, right?
So to get into the Metis program, we expect you to know basic Python skills, to have basic Python skills, and then also to know basic linear algebra, calculus, and stats. So with all those kind of basic math and coding skills in place, then we build on top of that in the program.
Got it. Okay, so pretty basic, not like a PhD in statistics or something.
Oh, no.
Because I know there are a few data science boot camps that require, they have a pretty high bar for what your background has to be, in it, especially in the world of academia. But in any case, okay, so pretty much beginner level. You said there are some requirements, but basic Python, basic linear algebra and stats. So mm-hmm. when a student is moving through the program and when you guys first start off, what is the first topic or area that you get into and that you teach?
So the first week of the boot camp is spent on exploratory data analysis. So the first week day one, we give the students this huge, messy data set. And their job is to work with their fellow students to read all that data in Python and then try to figure out how to clean it and then try to figure out if they can find some general patterns in that data and then tell a story with that data all within 1 week. So their final presentation is that Friday of the first week that they start.
Wow, right. Really? There's a phrase for that when you throw people in right away. I forget. There's a... whatever, I'll think of it later. But yeah. but it's like some saying when you just throw someone in right into the situation right away and they have to do something, yep. right? They have their presentation their first week. And then you don't have to go into like every week of the program because, of course, it's 12 weeks. But mm-hmm. what are some of like the higher level topics that you then teach throughout the course? And like what kind of skills are the students walking away with at the end?
Yeah, so we have the students do 5 different projects throughout the course. And then each project focuses on some combination of programming and math skills. So I explained the first one. So the second project, another 2-week project, that one focuses on linear regression and then also a lot more Python skills. And then the third project is on classification. And then we teach them SQL as well. And then the fourth project goes into natural language processing and clustering. And then that final project, we call their passion project. They can basically go into any of the tools or algorithms that we've taught them. So at that point, they know how to work with big data tools. They have some basic deep learning skills. There's a lot of stuff that we teach them, and then they can bring it all together at the end.
Nice. So a 12-week program, at the end, they're doing this passion project. And of course, you know, you're working with beginners essentially, right? Day in and day out. For someone listening to the show and wanting to get into data science, maybe they haven't even taken an online course yet. They really haven't looked into it very much yet. What are some things you could advise them to do first? Maybe some resources to check out or maybe, I don't know. I would love to hear what you think would be a good place for them to start.
So for me, I always like to start with a goal or a project idea in mind. So for me, for example, for my text message analysis, so my goal was to see how my conversations with my husband changed over time. And then after I had that goal, then I had to figure out what tools I need to solve that problem. And so then I ended up pulling a lot of that data into Excel. And so then I learned how to use Excel to manipulate that data. And then I learned how to visualize that data using a program called Wordle online. And then I was able to create words clouds with that data. And that basically, with that goal in mind, I was able to pick up kind of the small skills that I needed to be able to accomplish that goal.
Yeah, and I love what you're saying. I know, like when you're just speaking right before about this series of things that you went through, right? Having the goal, finding the tools, the visualizations, right? It's kind of like this story that it's like you have this question and then you start to, analyze, dig deeper, and you kind of like tell the story of the day. Then you end it, you wrap it up at the end with this conclusion. And I know for you, with that conclusion, with your text messaging between marriage and dating, you found a few things like some of the word differences and what that really meant and so on and so forth. And I love that because, I work, I have a full-time job, and which is separate from, Learn to Code With Me podcast and blog and all that. And I do get to work with a data team there. I'm not on the data team, but I work with them. And I feel like there's such a difference between someone or just whether it's you yourself or someone you're working with, just like running the numbers and just getting this information And then like really thinking about, like, again, like the goals and the story it tells. And when you also think of that, I don't know, at least for me in my work, like sometimes I start off wanting some information and then I start to see these patterns and I'm like, wait, actually all the data I asked for originally doesn't even matter. Can you actually find X, Y, Z? Because it's way more important to whatever problem I'm trying to solve. So I think, yeah, I think it's just that curiosity is such an important part of being a data science. I don't know, being a data scientist. I don't know, would you agree? And like, have you found, like, to me, you seem like obviously very technical and analytical, but you also are really great, you know, at writing, communicating, and having these questions and finding answers. And I don't know, I would just love to hear like your thoughts on all that.
Yeah. Oh man, I agree with all of that. So one of the things that we always talk about in our boot camps is sometimes people think as a data scientist, because data is in the title, you should start by looking at the data and then go from there. But that's not the way that we believe you should be looking at these problems. You should have that curiosity, like you said, and start with a problem or a goal in mind. And then once you start thinking through that problem, then you start figuring out what pieces of data you need to gather to answer that question. Because if you start with the data, then like you said, like that data might not apply to a final question, right? So you should start with that problem in mind and then try to answer it. And then you had also talked about storytelling, and that's such a huge part of data science, and that's one of my favorite parts. So I start with that question in mind, and then I'm starting to gather the data, and the whole time I'm trying to I'm doing my analysis, I also think of what story do I want to tell, and I always have that story in the back of my mind as I'm doing my analysis. And then for whatever final result I want to present, I need to make sure I communicate it with a good story. And so right now, our students in the boot camp, they have a presentation coming up 2 days from now, and we're telling them, stop all of your modeling and data cleaning. Your goal for the next 2 days is to figure out your story, because they have 5 minutes to present on all of the things that they've done in the last however many weeks. And sometimes students want to focus on the technical aspects, which is good to some degree, but at the end of the day, if you have a story, that's much more likely to get people's attention and to have people listen to what you're saying. So I would completely agree with that. Focus, data scientists, the great data scientists, they focus on that story, and they're able to tell their results from their data analysis in a really creative way.
Yeah, 100%. And I think this probably applies to other technical fields as well, not just data science. But I know, again, from my work and my full-time job in interviewing candidates for really technical roles, the candidates that always stand out to me are the people who, yeah, sure, like they have the technical skills. To be honest, I'm not the one vetting them on the really technical skills, like the coding assignments or something. So obviously that matters. And, you know, to get in the door, they have to pass a certain take-home assignment or something like that. But yeah, what really stands out is the person who can communicate and explain the technical concepts to someone who is maybe not as technical as they are.
Yeah, absolutely. I think the same things when I'm interviewing candidates. Like they have to have that basic like Python and the modeling skills. But at the end of the day, the differentiator is how well they communicate or how passionate they are about a particular data set. So my last job, I was working at cars.com, and I remember the intern we hired, he was a car enthusiast, and then he also had a ad product idea during the interview because he knew the space so well, and he was able to not just focus on the data, but think of the business applications as well.
Yes, the business applications, of course. That's important, right, for like any role, right? Understanding how whatever you're doing ties into the bigger picture of the business.
Yeah,
100%. Okay, so I know listeners, and I even know myself, like a couple years ago, if I was listening to this interview, what I would be thinking, I think, oh, storytelling is great. Oh, okay, yeah, sure, storytelling. But in my head, big, okay, like, how does that actually apply to the real world? Like, what do you mean? Like, how do I tell a story and how does that go into, like, the workplace? So I was wondering if you could share any tips or information on how a person, they don't have to be in data science, but a person who's maybe doing a presentation, they're using data in one way or another to make a case. Any tips on communicating that?
Hmm. Okay, so some things I can think of right off the bat are not starting your presentation with like data or code or technical terms, but starting your presentation with the question that you're trying to answer, trying to get everyone in the mindset of the problem that you started with, right? And then the way I like to tell presentations, instead of like starting with the problem, going through my whole process, and then communicating the result, I like to start with my problem and then tell people, and this was the awesome result that I got. And then once you get their attention, like you're able to save 20% by doing whatever model that I did. And so basically I start with the problem, then I say, okay, this is a way you can, this is how great my final results were. And then I kind of go back and I add in some of those details and then build up to my awesome results again. So I don't know if that helps at all.
Yeah, no, it definitely is with presentations. I guess maybe I was just kind of freeballing off the top of my head, or freewheeling, whatever the term is. But aside from a presentation, that's a great way, right, to convey and to tell a story. Was there any other tools that you would use, or maybe today at Metis, or maybe before at cars.com, to just kind of get information across in a story-like way? Or was a presentation like the main medium?
Yeah, I would say in my last job, I was in the marketing team, and so people loved PowerPoint presentations. And so that was a flow that I typically use for PowerPoint presentations. And then at Metis, one of the things that we talk about is data visualization. And so we spend a whole week on data visualization tools. And so one of the popular tools that we talk about is D3. And so if you think about like all those interactive visualizations that you see in news articles like New York Times, that's all using D3 to do that. But then in addition, there's a bunch of easier tools that you can use as well, like Tableau, or within Python, we use Bokeh and Plotly. They're basically these ways that you can visualize data. So instead of just telling people what happened, you can put that into a really beautiful visualization using these already built libraries. So it's not as hard to code.
Yeah, awesome. Thank you so much for sharing that. And I was wondering, before we, you know, wrap things up, if there is any other general advice you could share with folks who are listening to the show right now and may want to pursue data science. You mentioned some great advice before about starting with the problem and then, you know, finding the data to sort of answer the problem, and you went through that. But is there anything else? Maybe it's a blog you really like, or a podcast, or some online course you took or something. Just something that is kind of small and a quick win that they could do right away and see if it's maybe a good fit for them.
That's a good question. So I would say one thing that I would suggest is looking for small wins. So for example, if you already use Excel sheets at work, maybe if you want to take your skills up a notch, then you can learn how to write more complex formulas in Excel. And that would kind of take you on the path to doing more advanced analysis for something like data science. Or maybe at work you use a tool a visual tool to pull data from a data warehouse. And you want to actually understand what's happening, what specific data you're pulling, then you can learn a language like SQL that a lot of data scientists use to directly pull that data. So thinking of small ways that you can up either your programming skills, like with Excel or with SQL, or then also just like small ways to up your math and stats skills. So I watch a lot of YouTube videos on some like machine learning concepts. So maybe trying to watch a YouTube video to understand what a linear regression is or what classification means. Those are my tips.
Yes, I really like that advice. I really like the first bit you shared of like finding ways at your current job to maybe use data more. So maybe you have a project where it involves an Excel sheet, and taking it a step further, maybe past the normal project requirements, to like visualize the data or to play with charts or something. I really like that. Thank you so much again, Alice, for coming on the show. I really enjoyed chatting with you. Where can people find you online?
I'm sure. So you can find me on my blog. It's called A Dash of Data, and that's also my Twitter handle.
Awesome. Thank you again for coming on. If you like today's show, I would really appreciate it if you left a rating and review on iTunes or whichever podcast player you're tuning in on. Ratings are extremely helpful when it comes to a show's rankings. And by leaving a review, you would be helping me reach more listeners and spread valuable knowledge about breaking into the tech industry. To leave a review on iTunes, go to learntocodewith.me/iTunes. That'll take you straight to the iTunes page, and right there you can leave a rating and review. Thank you so much for supporting the show.